people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles, it says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want to stall way the back?
Sure. Line 18, Wilshire Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home, across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's an, like, a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go down Fairs, another tier, and about 5 minutes we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard. Too Many People could also be a motto for It's Casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with freeways, with people, or his native LA. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know why everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the 12th episode of Los Angeles Nista at SkidRowStudios.com. I'm your host, Eddie Solis, and you could call in tonight and speak to our in-studio guest, Fredo Ortiz. The number is 800-893-9562. I don't want to waste any time because Fredo has such a rich history in music and culture, and he's here. Fredo?
What's happening?
How are you, man?
I'm good.
Good. Well, first of all, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure.
Being on the 12th episode.
Yeah.
Los Angeles Nista, what's up?
Yeah, man. I mean, you've been here before, right?
I've been here for the More Music pod.
Yes, cast. Vince from the Mormons. You see, that's a special show because that was the first show, right? And still, that was the first show to ever come on Skid Row Studios.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so much love to Vince. I've known him forever, you know, same circle of friends.
Exactly.
Yeah, very cool. Well, anyways, thanks for joining us. There's a lot to talk about, you know. Your musical history goes every direction possible. The people you've worked with, what you're doing now with the Bongaloids.
Yeah.
And people who know you are going to be surprised that haven't seen or heard that because you're not playing percussion.
I'm not playing percussion in Bongaloids. Maybe in one song, but
I
picked up the guitar and I wrote some lyrics and started singing.
Doing the frontman thing,
you know, I'm the Mexican Dave Grohl.
Exactly. Chicano Grohl.
That's
good. That's how I roll, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So anyways, What we're going to do is, you know, the Los Angeles needs to format is rich in geography and public transportation of Los Angeles. So, you know, we're going to focus on a few different cities because of your history here. Yeah. We're going to, in the second hour, when we go into the classic format, we're going to talk about Gardena.
Yep.
And Silver Lake.
Silver Lake.
Where you're at, you know, and familiar with. And do you want to pick a third city to talk about?
Let me see. What? Like, I guess Whittier was also.
Whittier.
Whittier.
I'm just kidding. I have to say it like that because if you have history in Whittier and
I spent a lot of nights in a basement jamming out.
If I could Whittier. Say it like that, you get it.
You know,
not everyone gets it when I say Whittier.
A lot of burritos at Los Sanchez.
Yeah. You know, or what about El Tacor?
El Tacor too. The attacker.
The attacker. It attacks you. You get drunk and you drink and then you eat it. And then at 4 o'clock it attacks you.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Plenty to talk about. But we're going to take a break. We're going to play a few tunes from Fredo. What are we going to listen to here?
We're going to listen to, I guess, the Latino side of Bongoloids.
Okay.
I wrote a cumbia for a friend of mine's mother who was asking me when Bongoloids was going to start playing some dance music because she wanted to dance. Because, you know, I'd come from a background of loving every style, you know, from punk rock
absolutely.
To new age to, you know, hip hop to whatever, you know. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to write a cumbia and so hopefully she'll dance to it. So this is what it came out of it. It's called Monstro.
Okay.
And here we
Let's
go.
Let's listen to it.
pelo. Te espera, te apoya, pero tú me faltas de respeto. Yo no soy tu guerra. Viva la vida que tanto has sufrido por ti.
Hey, we're back. Welcome to Los Angeles Nisa. I'm your host, Edward Solis. Call us at 800-893-9562. My in-studio guest, Fredo Ortiz.
What up?
Hey, so you played two tracks for us. Tell us what that was.
The first one was a Bongaloids track called Monstro. It's probably the only cumbia on the record because the rest of the records, I guess there's some punk rock on it. There's some hip hop.
Pretty eclectic. Awesome.
So the song after that was a collaboration with two groups that I play with. One is East LA Taiko with my friend Maceo Hernandez. And also the second part of the song was written by Lisa Flores.
Gotcha.
And I play drums for her whenever we do shows. And then I'm also part of East LA Taiko with Maceo. I kind of brought the Latin percussion side of drumming and joined it with his Japanese Taiko drumming that he's been doing for many years since he was a teenager, I guess, you know.
And you guys play around town.
We play around town. We've been doing shows and benefits and fundraisers and stuff like that. And we're trying to like record a little EP, you know, to kind of get us to, we really want to go to Japan.
Okay.
We really want to take this to Japan. I mean, also we want to play for Los Angeles, but we live here. So we kind of want to take our collaboration, being that, you know, we're all Latino, we're all Mexican, you know, and actually Maceo's like half Nicaraguan, you know, so we're all, you know, there's a mixture, but we have that Japanese culture, we have the Latino culture, and we want to take that to Japan and anywhere else that we could, you know, and I think we're planning on doing some stuff in New Mexico, and they have some people out there that put on workshops and stuff.
Very nice. That sounds like just, you know, greatness waiting to happen when it does.
Yeah. It's an intense collaboration because the taiko drums are so huge, and it's just like, it's not just like a drummer playing a drum. You know, there's a whole martial art to it. You're playing through the drum. You're not just hitting a head with a stick. You know,
right.
There's a whole thing behind it.
So we haven't even got into the interview. We already have a caller. Oh. So let's break away and take this caller. Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air with Los Angeles Nista.
Did he hang up?
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, who's this?
This is Martin from Silver Lake.
Hey, Martin from Silver Lake. How are you?
Pretty good, man. How about you?
Thanks for calling. How are you doing?
Oh, great, dude. You have a good bike ride in?
I did not ride my bike.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm thinking of someone else answering the phone.
This is Eddie Solis.
Oh, dude. It's no way.
I think he thought he was talking to me.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
With my bike, yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Martin, thank you for calling. You want to just say what's up? You have anything you want to share with us?
Yeah, well, I had two questions.
Okay.
First of all, what did you guys think of the Grammys last night? I have this weird, I kind of watched, I couldn't help it. Like, I'm not a, you know, it was weird because Public Enemy used to sing, you know, I don't give a fuck about a goddamn Grammy. And then there he was last night, you know, with LL Cool J.
Well, you know, I mean, I love music. I immerse myself daily in it. I turned it on for 20 minutes, and I really tried to hang on. And 9:40, I put it on. At 10 o'clock, I just went to my usual Seinfeld routine because I wanted to laugh. I didn't want to be disgusted.
Yeah, it was weird. I had this really weird feeling watching it.
It seemed very homogenized. There was nothing real or organic about it. But yeah, that's to be expected, though.
Yeah, like I wanted the Bob Marley thing to be really rad, and then... Well, the one good thing about it, my daughter, who's 4, was like, oh, my gosh, what is this music? Who's singing? You know, whose song is this? She asked me. Like, out of all of them, she asked me, who's singing this?
Fredo, what do you think?
I can bust out some Bob Marley for her this week.
I missed the whole Grammys thing because I was busy recording music myself. I did look up on YouTube. I was like, oh, well, what was this Bob Marley tribute? And to me, as a live musician, that's what I saw. I was like, oh, people are playing their instruments. They're putting on a show. There's a horn section. The drummer's rocking it. Like, you know, I didn't pay attention to whether it was popular, it was a good song. You know, to me, it was just like they were showing the world that, hey, you can still play your instrument. You don't have to use a computer and just make tracks, you know. So that was
auto-tune.
For me, that was the most what I got out of it, you know. And the other thing, I was like, hey, they're kind of playing these songs a little fast.
Yeah.
The drummer's rushing it. That, you know, I come from a musician's point of view, so I was just like, you know, I'm just like, yeah. It was awesome. I thought it was awesome, you know. And then also the tribute at the end. You know, well, actually, it wasn't a tribute, but they did a Beastie Boy shout out to MCA, you know, which I thought was pretty cool. You know,
that was really cool. And Take Five sounded really good too. That always
I missed that one. I didn't see that.
I have one other question then.
Okay.
Whose physical record is going to come out first, Bongaloid's or New Los Angeles 2?
Hmm. Do you mean the physical vinyl and CD?
Yeah.
Well, ours is coming out on Earth Day. So that's like what? First weekend of April? Because, you know, don't drive your car, don't pollute, Earth Day. Cholos, cholas, barbecue in the front yard, drink
don't
Budweiser.
Throw your beer cans on the street.
Yeah.
And Bongaloids, well, shit. I'm actually in the studio going to start mixing the record. Got 12 fine cuts to mix. All the tracking is done. And you know, I guess hopefully within a month or two. So I guess, yeah, somewhere around the same time, April. Should I just do it on Earth Day, too?
Okay. Do it on Earth Day.
Yeah, and then you know, if the person can't carpool, at least the person's buying two records on the same day instead of one.
Yeah, there you go.
Dude, I could totally pick Martin's brain about this all night. You should just come down and sit in here with us.
Next time.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to get out of the way and let you guys keep talking.
Thanks, Martin.
Awesome, man.
Okay, man, I'm listening all night, so keep going.
Thank you so much.
All right, good night, guys.
Later. Thanks. Oh, dude, Martin Wong calling in from Giant Robot, like... Back in the 90s, buying that magazine from the Tower Record shelf, I would never think I'd be sitting here with Fredo and the dude from Giant Robot calling me.
That's awesome.
To say what's up. To me, that, like, that's stokage. That's like, you know, like when you see someone creates years ago.
Yeah.
And you see like, wow, like this is changing my life, skateboarding and graffiti. And then, you know.
And all of a sudden he's calling in.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. Okay, so let's get to it. You know, I got tons of questions to ask you. But I need to discipline myself because someone like you that comes from such a rich background and has such a rich history in making music and doing it professionally, there's a lot to talk about. But I think what's important in this first hour is to talk about how it started. So tell us exactly, you know, when did that moment hit you when you knew you were going to move forward playing music? What was that moment? Or was there a moment, or did you just... one day wake up and start playing?
It kind of was that one day I just woke up and started playing. My dad always played music around the house. It was always, the radio was always on.
Right.
And it was always good music. He had an acoustic guitar around the house. We also had a piano in the house. So I was always like, you know, fiddling around and acting like I can play an instrument, you know, until that one day he probably thought, like, oh, let me teach you something. You
right.
know? So I think it kind of started with piano, where he taught me the song Our Day Will Come. And I was going to do it for my, was it like fourth grade, like talent show or something like that. And I learned it, you know, I was able to memorize it, you know, and had the demo button also ready to go in case I forgot the song, you know, but, you know, did a samba style, you know, version of that song. And I think that kind of, you know, told my parents that, you know, hey, they, you know, he's interested in music, you know, and so I think after that, since the guitar was laying around, I was like, Mom, I want to learn guitar. So she got me guitar lessons, and there was a place in Gardena. I forgot the name of the music store, but I just remember walking in with the guitar. We sit down and, you know, I start learning the notes and names of the letters of the strings, and, you know, and all of a sudden, he's like, here, I'm going to go outside for a few minutes, learn this song. And it was like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, something like that, you know. And I looked at him. I looked at the music. I looked at the guitar. I was like, okay. And I think I tried it, you know, I did tried it once. And I didn't like it. And in the corner of the room was a drum pad. It was little old gray and white Remo drum pads. Mm-hmm. And I was like, those look cool. Like drums are cool. Like I'm going to try. The sticks were there. The guy came back in and he hears this, you know, the drumming, and he's like, hey, whoa, whoa, whoa. He's like, you're supposed to be learning the guitar. You know, I was like, no, I like these things. He's like, no, no, come on, man. Get back on the guitar. I was like, oh, this sucks. So that day when I went home, you know, I told my mom, I don't want to learn guitar anymore. And she's like, what? No, I just paid for, you know, a month's worth of lessons. You know, you're going to learn the guitar. You know, I'm not wasting my money. I was like, no, I want to play drums. She's like, what? Drums? No, no, no. I want, no, you're going to finish guitar lessons. And I was like, no, I was, you know, I was really set on learning the drums. And I think that was the day my mom was like, I think, you know, he wants to play drums. You know, so I started taking lessons there. My uncle, Gaston, found out that, you know, I started playing drums. And he was a musician as well. He was a saxophone player in the Army. And he was the first one to buy me like a little Toys R Us drum kit. And I was probably about, you know, 8 or 9 or something like that. And it lasted me. When I got it, you know, I was all happy. You know, I set it up in the room. And it lasted me about a week because the heads on those drums are like really thin paper, you know, and I guess I played it every day, like from morning to night, you know, and it, all of a sudden there's holes in every drum. And my dad's like, I think we got to get him a real drum set.
So how old were you when all this was going down?
So, I mean, I don't even remember, man. I just remember third grade, what are you, 7 years
eight,
old?
Eight,
you know, so 8 years old, you know, so I think around there, you know, because that's when it all started getting serious and I was in school band. You know, I was going to school in Pico Rivera and my mom was my bus from Gardena to Pico Rivera, you know, and I just remember being in school band, like after school every day, you know, and playing drums and being part of the concert band.
So it started that early on in your life.
Started that early on. And you know, and I also, you know, like I said, my family, you know, there was a lot of music around. My half brother, Glenn Bumpa, he was a Hammond organ player, piano player. And I think his story, like my mom kind of forced him to take piano lessons. He didn't want to, but he ended up, you know, soaking it in just the same and like being an amazing, you know, organ player. And I saw his band play a lot. They were kind of like the local, like wedding, you know, Chicano party band that, you know, played all the hits, all the old school hits.
Time out. That's the ultimate genre.
Oh,
Chicano party band.
Oh my God.
That's like, I want to be attached to that genre.
You know, all that, you know, and so here I am watching them. He was 20 years older than me, so I don't know how, you know, I was just sitting behind the drums, you know, watching all the musicians play. So I was getting that.
So you would sit behind the drum kit?
Yeah, I would sit behind the
drum kit. Oh, so you would see the back of his back and his arm movement and legs.
Yeah, yeah. So my brother would be playing on the left, and I'm right behind the drums. Just like,
so did you record all his movement and the sound coming from the drums in your head, kind of?
There was one night specifically that I remember that scene where I was just like behind and like.
So that was like that life-changing moment where it just threw you into that direction even more.
I think so, yeah.
Wow, that's cool. I just love talking to professional musicians such as yourself and find out when those moments in her life took place, like whether it's, you know, when they were very young or a teenager, and exactly, you know, how it went down, because that's what is a catalyst for what you're doing now. And that's pretty exciting, you know, kind of a priceless thing.
I remember when I think by like fifth, sixth grade, we were in the concert band. Mr. Ronzello was our music teacher. Mm-hmm. And there was two of us that I could actually play drum set, because now I have the drum set experience at home.
Right.
You know, and he was the other guy, I forgot his name, but he was like the metal dude in school, and he always wore Maiden shirts, you know, and he was kind of like a buff dude, and like, you know, and he was the one that could play like a rock beat. But then I guess for some reason I was the one that can play the funk beat, and it was just like that you know, there was like a typical, like that was, I don't know where I picked it up from, that it was like, Fredo, play that beat. So it was like, I had that, you know, already, like, You know, people wanted to see a performance, you know, aside from being in concert band, you know, they would tell the guy to play metal and then I would play the funk beat, you know, and that's how I was like, oh, so I can actually play, you know, people want to see me play. So,
So from the school years where you, you know, got your feet wet and played in front of people, what was your first band where you played originals and actually left the house, took your kit to go play at bars or venues or coffee shops, whatever?
That was in high school, probably my sophomore year, probably, I don't know, somewhere 89, 90. And I went to, I went to my friend Walter's house. He was the first guy to get me out of the house. He was the one that was like, hey, you have a drum set? Come to my house. Let's practice.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
Practice,
so
what?
So you're about 15?
Probably about 15.
Okay. I'm just going to jump ahead, but we'll come back. Okay, so you're 15. You leave the house.
When do you have your permit to drive?
16.
16. Yeah. So I was probably 16.
Okay, so just tell everyone out there listening, from 16 years old, when were you on that airplane with the Beastie Boys? How many years after?
So 16 years old, so I was 4 years after that.
Okay. Okay, let's go back. Okay, so he got you out. So that's the point I'm trying to make. Like,
right.
4 years, you leave the house to go play a party. Or was it?
So, oh no, I go to play in his like living room because his mom wasn't home, and he's like, "Hey, come on,
it was
let's
a living
jam.
Room gig."
And he invited one of my best friends over, who I actually met at his house, my friend Louis Perez, and he's like, "Yeah, I got this guitar player; he's coming over." You know, I was like, "Okay, cool." You know, and we started jamming. Louis comes over, and I think maybe Louis was looking for a drummer, but our first connection was. Actually, we argued over food. That was our first connection. And I was like...
It's the foodie wars. I get into that every day.
Yeah, it was just like, I think we were in Walter's kitchen, like, getting cereal or
what
something.
What was the argument over?
And I was
like
I think because he took the rest of the cereal and I wanted some. And he's like, no, dude. I'm like, come on. I'm like, no, you owe me that bowl of cereal. You know, just like right off the bat, we just clicked like that. But that night, you know, he's like, hey, give me your phone number. He's like, I want to talk to you about something. And he had a band out of Whittier called The Villains.
Okay.
And
I remember them.
They're like we need a drummer, you want to play? I was like, sure. And that was actually the second time where I took my drums to my friend Tony's house, set them up in his living room. And we just jammed.
And that's Tony Todaro.
Tony Todaro. Yeah. It's me, Louis, Billy Harrigan. And that was the first time. We were like, yeah, we're going to start a band. You're the drummer. I was like, oh, I'm a part of a band. And he's like, here, listen to all this music. And he started giving me like old Minor Threat CDs. And
it's a lot of American hardcore.
Yeah. You know, and so he's like, listen to these beats and learn these, you know, and like, Bad Religion beats and stuff like that. And so I took them home and I listened to them. I learned them and came back. And all of a sudden we just kept practicing. And all of a sudden we were a band. Oh, and then we were practicing because we were going to do the talent show in high school. We played the talent show and I thought we were going to win.
Was it all originals?
It was all originals.
Oh, wow.
Like Louis was already writing songs. Like I would say like, I always say he shut out songs. Like, you know, like I think our first little demo tape, we already had like 50 songs. Like,
wow.
We just not. So he's like, I got this other one. Boom, boom. And then like, I just had that direct connection with him and music where it was just like, I just followed his lead and followed the path of the song, you know, and from beginning to end. And all of a sudden we have a little demo tape, you know, and
right.
Passing it out to all our friends and.
Now
playing backyard parties.
So after experiencing all that with the band doing originals, leaving the house, and that's through high school, till after high school, right? You're doing the band.
So we're still doing the band.
Now, how did that segue into you joining the Beastie Boys?
Well, I mean, the Villains started playing Hollywood. I think we played the Natural Fudge Cafe.
Natural Fudge, yep.
And I still have the clip, the LA Weekly clip from that, you know. And
archives, we're talking about archives, yeah. In the lounge, very important as you get older.
Exactly.
Preserve your work, my friend.
I laminated it too.
That's awesome.
This is our first Hollywood gig, man. We're going big time.
You're serious about it, right?
So, you know, we were constantly playing shows. I think we were playing in Long Beach, we're playing backyard parties, we're playing in Alhambra. We're playing, you know, and all of a sudden we get a gig at this place called the Nova Express. Wait, yeah, Nova Express. I said Natural Fudge first, right?
Right.
And this was the Nova Express Cafe across from Cantor's.
Okay.
And again, we were playing a little punk rock gig. There was a band called Monk that played after us. I don't know if you remember them. Actually, the bass player of Very Be Careful was in that band.
Okay.
We're kind of like Fugazi-ish, three-piece. You know, the drummer had an awesome red champagne, red wine-colored drum set that I wanted. But after we finished our set, I walk out. I'm unloading my stuff out, and this guy stops me, and he's like, "Hey, what does your shirt say? It's hot to be in Chicago." And I look down. I'm like, "What? My shirt?" And I had my bass drum in my hand, and I was like, "I'm just trying to load out." He's like, "But what's your shirt say?" I was like, "It says it's hot to be Chicano, and it has a big old chili pepper." My mom would get all these T-shirts from her job because she worked for the LA Unified School District and like the what was it called? She worked for like the immigrant kids, you know. So that there was all these like Chicano shirts that would come home, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to sport them, you know. I'm going to be brown and proud and like
brown and down."
and all of a sudden, this guy's like clowning my shirt, you know, saying it's hot to be in Chicago. So I got all mad. I was like, "No, bro, like, you don't even know what it says." And he's like, "No, man, I know what it says. My wife's Chicana, you know." He's like, "I'm half Mexican, half Japanese," but I had no idea who he was. I continue loading my stuff out, and he kind of corners me again, and is like, "Hey, man, so I hear you. Do you do anything else? Are you playing drums?" You know, I was like, "Yeah, well, I'm a percussionist as well. I play for this band called Yeska," you know, that was also out of the same high school. You know, mm-hmm. Both of those bands played the talent show, but okay. I wasn't a part of the ska band at high school. I became a part of the ska band outside of high school because they're like, "Hey, you know, our drummer has this wood block. It's awesome percussion. Hey, don't you have percussion? Don't you have timbales at your house?" I was like, "Yeah, my dad bought me timbales, but I don't know how to use them. It's just two toms and a cowbell. I don't know how to play that. They're sitting under the bed collecting dust." And they're like, break them out. So I broke them out, and that was my first experience of, you know, playing Latin music and learning Latin rhythms and stuff like that. So that's where the whole Latin percussion thing came in. You know, I started to learn how to play congas. My dad bought me a set of congas. He bought me timbales. Like, he was pretty much setting me up, you know. He was like, "Okay, you need these tools, you know." He's like, "Try this." And I was taking them, you know, I was taking them to the next level.
So your dad was a huge component in your percussion outlook and your daring kind of characteristics you had.
I mean, down to buying me a kick drum mic. And I'm like, "Dad, I don't need a kick drum mic. Like, that's I'm a drummer, cool." You know, he's like, "Dude, you'll need a kick." And of course, I still have that kick drum mic to this day. And I record. And like, I was like, "Oh, dude, my dad was awesome." Like,
he just
hooked me up left and right. So that was, you know, that's what related to the Latin percussion side. And I think somebody had tipped this guy who ended up being Money Mark, keyboardist of the Beastie Boys.
So it was Money Mark.
Okay. And he said he had a gig for his solo project, and it was at 50 Bucks downtown. I don't know if you remember.
I don't.
Going to 50 Bucks. It was this place. The band Yeska and the Villains, we all kind of played. It was a huge scene back in the early 90s with like Aslan Underground, Olim, you know, Quetzal and all these, you know, these bands playing. Yep. We were all playing together. So I knew the place. I was like, "Oh yeah, 50 bucks. I'll see you there." I was like, "You want me to bring my drums?" He's like, "No, bring your congas."
So he said, "Don't bring your kit."
Yeah, don't bring my kit. And I kind of got bummed out because I really wanted to be like the rock drummer, you know, and be a drummer. And he was like, "Oh man, I got to bring my congas." Not that it was a letdown that to play percussion. I just wanted to be more of a drum kit player. And so I was like, "All right, I'll bring my congas down." Little did I know that he was inviting, you know, Ad Rock and MCA of the Beastie Boys to come that night. And it was sort of my audition, you know, without having a proper audition going to a studio.
So he made sure they were there to see him.
He made sure that they were there. And he's like, "I got this kid. It's like, he plays percussion. Let's check him out." Because at the time, it was at the end of Ill Communication.
Isn't that album. When Bobo left?
That was when Bobo left and went to Cypress Hill. So all of a sudden, they're like, "We need a percussionist." And, you know, there's thousands of percussionists out there. There's, you know, session guys. You know, you probably go to the union and pick a list, you know. But here I am just randomly meeting Money Mark, you know, the right place, the right time. He's like, you know, and it just so happened that Money Mark also grew up in Gardena. Originally from Detroit, but is, you know, eventually is parents, they all moved to Gardena.
That's your hometown.
That's my hometown. And he's like, where do you live? I'm like, Gardena. He's like, no, you're not. I'm from Gardena. So all of a sudden we had a connection, you know, and even Mario C's from Gardena. Like it was,
really?
It was this whole Gardena pocket of people. So all of a sudden,
that's like, weird how like that pocket of people like are connected to the Beasties and like, they're so New York.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who would ever think like Gardena is the hub
right
of the BC boy, you know, right. Yeah. Engine.
And, you know, that I think that night, you know, I got introduced. I shook their hands.
Right.
I dropped to the floor. I was a fan. You know, my dad right. took me to see the Beastie Boys in 87.
Where was that at?
At the Greek Theater.
Okay.
And it was, I think it was one of the Raising, wasn't the Raising Hell Tour? Or I don't know. But I still have my tour books that they were selling at the
Tour programmers. Remember tour those? Yeah. When you'd go to a concert and you have programs?
Programs. It's like pictures from all their tour. And in the back, you can order like the hats and Adidas and
that's
stuff
awesome.
Like that. And I have a Run DMC one and I have a Beastie Boys one.
That's so cool.
And so already, like, you know, I knew their music. I already listened to Check Your Head and Ill Communication.
When you did that gig, what year was it?
So that was like probably November 95.
I mean, yeah, they were already on top of their game.
Yeah.
Way well into it.
Yeah, and they had the last part of their tour, which took me to Australia for a festival.
So when you had that show with Money Mark and met them, what was the process? Like, I mean, thank you, nice to meet you. So what happened after?
They didn't talk about tour. They just like, sounds good. Sounds good, man. Good to meet you. And that was it. And they took off. And I just sat there with my friends going like, holy shit, like what just happened? You know, and Mark's like, I'll give you a call, you know, during the week, you know, pick up your phone. So he ended up calling me during the week and letting me know that they needed somebody. He's like, don't get excited, you know, because things like this might not happen, you know, but just letting you know that they're considering you. Are you available? I was just like, of course I'm available, you know, and you know, I go home to tell my folks about it. And my mom's like, you're not traveling anywhere. You're finishing school. You're in college right now. Like, you need to finish school first. You're not going off to play music. And I'm like, wait, but you don't understand. This is the Beastie Boys. And this is like a huge thing. Like, you know, I need to do this. And my dad kind of convinced her. He's like, when is he going to get another opportunity like this to, you know, be invited like that to travel the world, play with a huge band? Like, you know, and already I was, you know, used to L.A. performances. I was already playing with Yeska at the House of Blues, opening up for War, Celia Cruz, Tito Puente. I was doing the gigs with the Villains, you know, opening up for Social D and stuff like that. So, I was already exposed to, like,
Bigger shows
and, you know, stage.
The
and
professional set. Environment.
Exactly. You know,
right.
So coming into the Beastie Boy environment, I already knew what was up. I wasn't nervous. I wasn't, you know, I was still the rookie. You know, I was still 20 years old and, like, you know, but it's like all of a sudden they were like, hey, so we need to rehearse. We got a studio in Atwater. It's mm-hmm. called G-Sun. We got stuff there. Don't bring anything there. And
Just roll up.
And the crazy thing was is that I already knew their songs. Like, even the instrumental ones. Like, I just, you know, I listened
awesome.
To them every day.
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, oh, this is kind of easy because I already know this shit. Like, this is awesome, you know, and went in there. But I, you know, actually my dad had prepared me to, you know, be professional. He was like, you need to study and you need to, you know, ask questions and, you know, be sure you're prepared for this, you know. And
that's cool.
And it turned out to be that, you know, I was able to be myself and do whatever I felt was right for that, you know, song or for, you know, the moment, you know.
So the framework they put you in, it was like, do what serves the song. We're open to you doing your thing. Kind of,
yeah.
Was that?
Yeah.
It wasn't, you have to play this.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, you know, the songs, but then it's like, yeah. And I guess for, you know, as a percussionist, it's always, I always called it the salt and pepper of the song because you're spicing it up. You know, you're adding the extras, you know, the little ding and the little shaker here and the tambourine. And, you know, there's no really no set parts. You know, it's kind of like what you feel would enhance the song. You know, it's like I was recording on some songs, you know, a few days ago, and, you know, you have a basic track, drums, guitar, you know, vocals. It's like, but all of a sudden you add a shaker, you add a tambourine, and you add this and that. And it
a little dash of this, a little dash of that.
It brings it to life. So here I am, all of a sudden I, you know, go from wanting to be like, you know, Tommy Lee to being a percussionist. You know, now that's my main thing, you know, and here I am touring Australia. We go to...
What was the first show you did?
Melbourne. It was a festival called Somersault.
Okay.
And it was an offshoot of Big Day Out.
Okay.
And on the bill, Beastie Boys were headlining.
Of course.
Pavement, The Amps, Jawbreaker.
Yep. Oh, wow.
Bikini Kill. Beck. Did I say Beck already?
No, not yet.
Beck, Rancid. And these are all bands that me and the guys from The Villains are just in our car listening to driving
all
around
the time.
Whittier. And all of us, here I am, playing in the headlining band.
With those bands under you.
With those bands under me, And I still feel like a fan. I'm walking around going, oh, there's Dave Grohl. Oh, yeah, Foo Fighters was on the bill.
That's intense. It was nuts. Yeah. So once you were in and you experienced shows like that, how long were you in the group?
So that lasted probably about a month and a half. So I was in the group for the first time for about a month and a half, and then the tour ended. And I didn't hear from them till 1998, which was the Hello Nasty album,
mm-hmm.
and that was a huge tour. In the meantime,
I was at the Forum, dude.
Oh man,
both nights
in our orange jumpsuits.
Yeah,
in the round.
Totally.
That was crazy.
In the round on the turntable.
When I came back home, we do the tour. I ended up meeting the tour manager, Rancid, who eventually was tour managing The Offspring.
Okay.
And after I came home from that first Beastie run, I get a call. And the guy's like, hey, so I got your number. We're looking for a percussionist. I'm working with The Offspring. We have some studio guys, but they're not that cool. We're looking for somebody cool. And we thought you would be a good fit.
To do the live shows,
and they did a tour on the East Coast, starting in Boston, and it was L7 and the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, and then I played one song with The Offspring.
So you were on the whole tour.
So I was on. It was a short run, but I mean that I guess coming from doing the Beastie Boys, that was my next gig out of the Beastie Boys. I was coming back home to LA to keep playing shows with The Villains and Yeska and back home and, be with my folks and go out, party. And all of a sudden I get a call. I'm like, oh, I got to travel again. This is something.
So that world was coming to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, of course it would, I think, what was it, the Ice House? I saw The Offspring at the Ice House.
And Fullerton?
Fullerton.
Ah, yes, the Ice House.
Who else played? I forget. NoFX played. But, we were just going to see shows. And
right.
So all of a sudden, here I am playing for all these bands that, I'm listening to. And all of a sudden, I was looked at as, there's Fredo, the percussionist, So I was like, oh, shit. Well, yeah, I guess.
You were that component that all these huge mainstream bands needed.
Yeah.
See, not just a percussionist, but someone cool that looks like they actually were the real deal and are the real deal. That's what it is. I think they're dealing with too many studio hacks.
Something. I just found myself in these positions. I was like, this is awesome. I'm down for this.
Good. So from then on, I mean, after your first tenure with the Beastie Boys, it just seems like, you stood busy with The Offspring. Who else? Did you do anything else before you did?
Well, Money Mark was doing his first solo record, so I toured with him a lot.
Who's the keyboardist for
the Beastie Boys? So he was the one that kind of kept me busy, and he was my link to a lot of the connections that I have now to this day, because he was just kind of, he took me under his wing and showed me the ropes. And I mean, from touring to putting out records to recording, I was learning so much from Mark, and it was just me, him, a car full of gear. We were going up the West Coast all the way up to Seattle playing little shows.
And so you toured with him and did a bunch of little shows.
Yeah, I played drums on one song, The Insects. Insects Are All Around Us song. I don't know if you ever heard that. But I was the guy, he'd do a one-man show, a table full of gear, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, I got my friend Fredo. He's going to play drums on this one song. And then I'd come in, play drums. And that would be the end of the show. And then he'd go schmooze and I'd tear down all his stuff, pack the car up, and then we'd drive. So that was kind of another first experience of touring. Because for the most part, with the villains in Yeska, we did a lot of local shows, you know.
Right.
I didn't, you know, wasn't in a van.
You didn't really get in the van.
Yeah. You know, right. I didn't have that. And then all of a sudden, like, I started backwards with Beastie Boys. And
wow.
Flying everywhere. And
so
tour buses.
The amazing thing is, what I get is kind of like from that camp, the Beastie Boys camp, you are very well-rounded. I mean, you were able to experience the huge stadium rock, you know, aura, and then like through the same camp, go out and get in the van and just play smaller shows, which both you haven't done until you were involved with them.
Yeah.
So you got both, like, you're very well-rounded because of that. You got both ends of the spectrum. Yeah. That's cool.
And I was down for all the ends of the spectrum because, you know, I guess because I hadn't experienced it, it was always a new experience, you know, like, oh, now right. I'm in a van. Okay, let's see what this is like. Oh, I need to bring a pillow because...
How long was the tour with the for the second Beastie's run?
For the second Beastie's run, that was a big record. That was the Hello Nasty record. Intergalactic was the single.
Right.
And I mean, we were selling out arenas
yeah.
all over the
US. It was like two or three nights at the Forum, right?
It was two nights at the Forum.
Yeah.
And then we went to Europe, you know, went all around Europe. And we would always go back to Australia and Japan, you know, and it was just that was the biggest one. And I mean, we had a big round stage that spun in the middle.
Yeah, it was like a turntable, right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought it was. It was in the round. I remember going to both Forum shows and just seeing, like, it's like, is that a turntable?
Yeah, every five songs it would, you know, change, you know, it kind of pivot and face another part of the arena, you know. So at least, you know, by the end of the show, everybody got to see the faces.
That's cool.
Of everybody. And then what I think, you remember the last song, Sabotage, it just kept going around.
Yeah.
And it was actually somebody under the stage, like, pedaling like a bike.
Like Fred Flintstone style?
Yeah, like Fred Flintstone style. That was the awesome thing.
So let's talk about your new group, the Bongaloids.
Bongaloids.
Bongaloids. All right. So I have a question for you.
Yes.
All right. We have a guest we're going to bring in, another member, a component of the Bongaloids is here tonight. And her name is Ruby.
What's up, Ruby?
Get up. Breaking shit already.
How are you, Ruby?
I am great.
Good, 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 good. Thanks for joining us here tonight.
Thanks for having me.
You play bass, right?
I do play the bass.
In the Bongaloids. Is it Bongaloids or the Bongaloids?
It's Bongaloids.
Bongaloids is Bongaloids.
And you're the head bongo at Bongo.
I'm the head bongo.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook. I retain Facebook information, but not real news.
Right.
So if you put something on Facebook, I'll remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So how did you meet Fredo?
Fredo was playing with the villains, and my cousins were in the villains. So I was always the kid, like, hanging out, you know, just kind of tagging along.
Because you were into music and stuff like that?
So I grew up going to see them. I'd drive to, you know, all kinds of different places to see them play at shitty bars, you know.
I like how she tells it like it is.
Yeah.
Shitty bars.
Yeah. Just punk rock, just zits and smelly BO, you know.
Lots of drinks.
Get out of the house for a Saturday.
Yeah, well, because I'm younger, but because they were already touring, but I was still, you know, in high school. But
okay.
I didn't get to go see them until I was, you know, 18 or older, you know.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So, okay. So my question for you is, someone who comes from such a heavy percussive background on the kit and with the, you know, the whole Latin percussion instruments and doing it, a proven professional, doing it on different levels, what made you pick up the guitar to a point where you're going to be on stage in front of people?
I think... probably when I was like 10 or 11, I swear I was the one that wrote the song, No New Tale to Tell. Because I was sitting strumming that. I had my dad's acoustic guitar and I was just strumming the guitar. And I probably heard it on the radio and was copying it, but I was like, oh, I wrote a song. It was like my first song. And then I heard it on the radio. I'm like, wait a minute, they stole my song. So, I mean, I had already like kind of picked up the guitar and felt it and kind of knew what to do. But it wasn't until I was in the villains and, you know, my friend Louis, you know, he taught me a couple bar chords, you know. I was like, oh, this is how you play a bar chord. And just being around them, I was just like always wanted to play guitar. And every time I went home, and even with Mark, you know, he's a keyboardist. But he's really a guitar player. He learned, you know, how to play guitar. And so from all these, you know, top guitar players around me, I was like, I was getting all these influences. And I would go home and my mom bought me, well, the time that I was getting lessons, she bought me, I think it was, I forget the name of it. It's the old, like, Sunburst Tiesco or something like that, like old guitar, like real thin. And right. I still have it.
The Chinese knockoff?
Yeah, like a Chinese knockoff, you know. So I always had a guitar in the house. And it wasn't until maybe like the year 2000 or something like that where Money Mark gave me a 4-track mini disc recorder.
Nice.
And he's like, hey, learn how to record. You know, this is way before I bought Pro Tools and all that stuff. And so I sat there and I'd learned how to use the 4-track recorder. I had my dad's kick drum mic that he bought me.
All came together, right?
I had a guitar, you know, and I had a keyboard in the house. So I was like, oh, I started learning how to play and record. And I mean, early on when I was young, that was the only schooling that I got on guitar, like any theory. So anything that I play now is either by ear or what, you know, my friends have taught me. So I still...
No MI, right?
No, there's no MI.
Nothing against MI, yeah, but no. Just to be clear, No MI. MI?
No. School of the Hard Knocks.
Same here.
Yeah, you know.
School of, like, fight your way to the front and, like,
sweat it,
you know,
out.
Just sweat, yeah, it out and watch the guitar player.
Watch the guitar player. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
so take it in.
You know, I still say that I need to go in and
watch,
you know,
and
take
learn
a little bit of lessons. But you know, I once I started playing, I started recording songs, and I'd been recording since then. You know, and it wasn't until years later. My dad was also the one pushing me to going, hey, by the time you're 30, you should release your own record. You know, and I was like,
that is my awesome own, to like, have my that own record. Push.
You know, and I never did it because I was too busy having a good time. You know, I was on tour. I'd come back home. You know, I'd party with my friends, you know, and I wasn't thinking about making records. You know, I was already a part of other people's records. But it wasn't until that time where I was like, wait a minute. You know, like I see a lot of people, you know, benefiting from writing their own songs. And I have a collection of my own songs. So I was like, why don't I write my own stuff? Why don't I try to write a song? Why don't I try to, you know, make a chorus and a verse? And, you know,
it's right. Like,
so I tried it and I started doing it and started learning and I started playing it for friends. I even played it for MCA one time and he agreed. He's like, yeah, you should put out a record. And that's when I had to get serious and be like, okay, now I need to buy a good guitar. I need to, you know, make an album, you know, and that's how Bongo
Arrange
Boys
can, arrange the songs.
Arrange the songs, you
throw
know.
Away the stuff I don't want to use.
Sing the songs.
All of a sudden I was like, oh, there needs
Remember
to be lyrics.
Lyrics.
I kind of started backwards. I recorded the drums first, and for most of the songs, like, mapped out a song just by playing the drums. So I'm like, okay, hit record.
But when you were playing the drums for this, did you just pick and choose drum beats and patterns and then worry about what I'm going to play on guitar later? Or did you hear the guitar in your head?
I was kind of, while you were playing. Some of the ideas, I was hearing the guitar in my head. You know, I was kind of like humming it out and going, you know, and just playing a beat and go, okay, there would be a change here. There would be a change there, you know, and then hopefully it panned out in the end. Because you know, there's also people that write their stuff out. You know, they write music. And I kind of like stopped doing that after high school because I was so involved in playing live that that's the only thing that, you know, I did all the time. So I stopped reading music. I stopped, you know, not just because I didn't have to, you know. Most of the jobs that I got were like, hey, can you play this beat? And be like, yeah, sure, you know. And so, you know, that now, you know, I still want to learn how to do that. But what's taking over is just like going for it, putting on the guitar, playing the song that I wrote, you know, and just doing it, you know. I don't have to wait to learn how to know what chord I'm playing. It's just like, I'm going for it, you know.
So how long would you say the idea, or you gave birth to the idea of the Bongaloids,
I guess about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
You know?
Now, after seeing you on, you know, on different platforms, like, you know, the seeing you at the Forum with the Beasties and knowing your history and then seeing you play with Bongaloids, I noticed when you play guitar, you have a percussive kind of strumming hand, a little more. And I think that cuts through from your background.
Right.
And I think it adds a unique style to your guitar playing that you can't learn at MI or you can't learn anywhere. You just got to like delve into it and you, you know, kind of really adapt to your new instrument. Right. And that's what you're doing. Now, when it comes to your guitar playing, have you spent a lot of time with guitar tones live, and do you compare it to like how you hear a drum project? I mean, like, what's your take on a guitar sound that suits you, that best suits you?
I find it harder to find your favorite sound or tone because you have to spend the money to buy. Well, yeah, that's not necessarily the case, but you have to have some good equipment and be able to play it.
And be able to play, have a nice selection of it.
Drums, you can have a crappy drum set, you know, make it, learn how to tune it, make it sound halfway decent, but it's always up to the player to make it sound, you know, the way it sounds. You know, I can play a trash can, you know, and now all of a sudden here I am with a guitar and I'm like, oh, I really have to, oh, there's a tone knob. Like, what does this do? And I just turn it back and forth. I'm like, okay, I don't really hear a difference. You know, I need a good amp. Now I need an amp. How much are these amps? Oh, they're like, you know, $2,000. Like, I can't afford an amp. What do I have? I have this crappy little amp back here, which is, okay, that works, you know. And so now I had to start, like, learning, you know, what I really wanted. And I was on tour in 2008 with a band called Tito and Tarantula. Mm-hmm. And they were endorsed by this German guitar company, and because we were traveling in Germany. And one of the times that the company came around, they're like, hey, we're bringing some guitars for you to try out. And they're like, hey, can you bring some guitars for the rest of the band to try out, because they want to purchase one. So that was my opportunity to buy like a really decent guitar. And I don't even know what kind of pickups are on it. It's kind of like, it kind of looks like a Rickenbacker, but I mean, it's the guitar that I use now and it sounds awesome. And I bought an old, I saw somewhere somebody had a basement head that they were using as a guitar.
Right.
Guitar head. And I just bought, I Craigslist it, you know, and bought it.
Craigslist is so awesome.
Craigslist killer.
I'm the Craigslist killer.
By the way.
Craigslist is so super duper awesome. You know what my formula is?
What is your
formula? Is I buy gear right before the first of the month, because that's when musicians need to pay rent.
Ah.
So I start looking on the 28th, 29th. It's like, you want 800, we take six? I'll be there in 2 minutes. You know, I'm just saying that's a good little little hint I want to share with you.
Thank you.
That's the hot tip.
I had to get away from Craigslist for a while. It was like I'd go to bed and I'm just like on the phone, like looking. I'm like, oh, what's up there?
And I get them
at 3 a.m, like be the first one to be like, I'm interested in your pedal. And then they're like, oh, well, you're the first one. I've gotten 10 calls already, but you know, you can come check it out.
I mean, you know, I have an advantage because I play guitar lefty. So there's not a lot of lefty players out there to begin with. So when a lefty player is selling something, it's like, okay, well, I hope someone's interested because there's not really a lot of lefty players. So if they're lucky to get a call, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so so then you'll see like rad guitars that are worth like $1,000 out there for like, you know, six with a hard case, $650. Right. And then it's like a week later, it's $550. And then a week later, it's like $5.
Right.
And then it's like five or best offer. And it's like, dude, $350.
And not knowing guitars.
Seriously.
Like,
yeah.
Not knowing guitars or like, you know, the years or anything like that. It's just like, I don't know what to look for. I know what to look for in drums and
sure.
Cause that's, you know, the forte, but it's like, so now I'm like starting to learn, but now I got a good guitar, I got a good amp and I'm good, you know, and then all of a sudden I have pedals and I was like getting into the pedal world. I'm like, Jesus, like, well, I thought drums were expensive, but you know, there's less components, but it's a different world, and I'm enjoying it.
You know. I mean, you've definitely like come full circle with, you know, playing music. I mean, piano, and you've done, you know, Latin percussion on a platform as big as the Beastie Boys, and playing drums for Money Mark and Tito and the Tarantula, and now fronting, you know, your own band Bongaloids, playing guitar and singing. You're like, you know, you're Dave Grohl. Dave Grohl in Espanol.
David Grohl.
David El Grohl. Chicano Grohl, dude.
Chicano Grohl.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
So that's the side band.
That's side band. That's your side project, right? No, I mean, that's really cool that you know, it's, I mean, you do everything well, and I've seen Bongaloids, and, you know, I'm very, you know, I'm a fan, and I love the music, and I like the way, the approach. It's very serious, like, you know, enough where, you know, you care about your craft. Like, when you come out, I could tell you care about your craft, and it's good songwriting, but it's also delivered in a way where people could relate to it.
Right.
You know, and I just think, you know, I don't know where that comes from. Maybe
I think being exposed to that, you know, performance world of, you know, entertaining, right, and, you know, making, right, sure that people, you know, walk away happy, you know,
yeah,
enjoying the show. You know, it's like, I mean, there's a point where me and Ruby, you know, put down our instruments and we have beats and we do a rap, you know, about, you know, scamming in Lake Lake. You know, it's like,
dude, I'm jealous. So it's really like, scamming in Lake Lake?
Yeah.
Whose idea was that?
Well, I wrote the song for Fredo. He presented the music and he's like, hey, can you do something with this? I'm like, yeah. So I had to figure out how to write a song for us to do together. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Like, she's like, are you going to write any lyrics? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, here, I wrote you some verses. I'm like, oh, yeah, shit, I got to learn these. Oh, you mean I got to memorize these and sing them? Yeah. Like, damn it. Like,
you know what?
About this front man thing.
We have a caller.
Oh, we do? Oh,
yeah. Let's take this caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hola.
Hola, this is your pervy tío.
Pervy
tío.
Hey. That's my pervy uncle on the line. How are you, tío? Hey.
What's up, Holmes?
Hey, I like it. I want to hear some music, but listen, I want to talk to Fredo and Ruby, eh?
Go ahead.
What's up, eh?
Hey.
Hey.
Listen, I want to hear the stories, you know, the pervy stories.
You know what, dude? This isn't that kind of show.
Are you eating some Nilla wafers right now?
What?
Nilla wafers? That's your favorite. Well, never mind.
Put the cat away.
I love you guys.
I love you, pervy tío.
Is there any more alter egos going to be calling? I love it. Bring it on. I signed up for this kind of thing.
Anyway, I just wanted to call in. It's Greg from Rough Church, and Fredo and I and Ruby are friends and play music, and it's, you know, good times.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg, thanks for
Greg
calling.
Greg is, I did a session at a studio called Estudio in Lincoln Heights. Studio. My friend Manny, he called me in for a session, and it was Greg. He was recording there, and ever since that day, we've remained friends, and we continue to make music, and he has his band, Rough Church. Amazing songwriter.
Rough Church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Check them out.
Yeah. Check them out. We're playing a show this Saturday. In Highland Park.
HLP.
In Highland Park at the American Legion,
fool.
Dude, maybe I'll get jumped out. I'll go just to get jumped out and go home. I'll just show up and get jumped out and go home.
Love you, pervy tío. Okay,
so plug the gig again.
Saturday.
American Legion with like 8 bands. Seasons is playing. Bongaloids, Rough Church, World Record. Karen the Lesbians, Arca Rose.
What time's it start?
Watch, yep.
What time's it start?
The band, $7.
$7.
I love the Highland Park American Legion. There's so much history there. That's where they film Parts of La Bamba.
Yeah, you could RSVP for that too if you want to do that.
All right,
us.
I gotta go.
Bye, Pervy.
Don't leave. Okay. All right.
Goodbye.
Take care. Okay, so thank you for calling. So why don't you guys, Ruby, why don't you plug that gig since you seem to know what's up with with scamming and Lake Lake and Facebook events and all that.
Saturday, it's LA's best bands.
Of all time?
That's what the flyer says. so it should be fun. Come on down, American Legion.
Bongaloids will be closing out the night. Party with Bongaloids. The whole thing behind the show.
Scam the jam.
I'm keeping it late 80s lingo going.
Yeah.
The whole thing behind the show is Greg and his partner from New Zealand put out a zine. The old, like, old school, like, punk rock style zine. And it's like, You know, one side is I have no idea, and the other side is Drill Magazine.
Very nice.
And the band, he's getting bands from L.A. To play the show. He's also putting a little compilation that you'll get at the show once you pay for your ticket. But we're trying to have a relationship with bands from New Zealand too, and have them come down here and have all these bands. You know, just kind of open it up.
Show
trade.
Community.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we got it. You'll get a zine when you get to the show. And you know, there's how many bands? There's 7 bands, 8 bands with Bongoloids.
Very cool.
And it's Late Night with Bongoloids.
Call out the date again.
So this is on Saturday, February 16th, 8 p.m. at the American Legion Hall. It's 227 South Avenue 55. In Los Angeles, and it's $7 to get in with a RSVP to speed bmp, like speed bump, at earthlink.net.
Very cool.
Check it out.
For those of you Los Angeles Nista regulars, if you want to see the show, you can take the Gold Line. And if you want to, if you really are going, I take, you know, this is no joke. Do not look at the MTA PDFs because they take forever to download. Message me directly, just like you all did during the Kings Championship season. I taught you all how to get to Staples Center. Same thing. If you guys want to get to the show, let me know and I'll give you directions. Depending on which direction you're coming from, I could tell you what bus will get you to Union Station and what train to take from Union Station, which will always be the Gold Line.
Right.
But depending on, you know, like for instance, when people are coming from the Valley, they could take the Red Line to Union Station, get on the Gold Line, go to Highland Park. Or when people are coming from like Sierra Madre, they get on the Gold Line all the way. Or coming from Whittier, our stomping ground, there's, you know, you could take the Montebello Line 10 all the way
to I'm gonna have to hit you up because...
anytime.
Because I have not taken any of the trains since they've opened up.
Dude, I am going to stoke you out beyond belief. You know what you could do? In a matter of 3 hours, you could... go out on a Saturday night or a Friday night between downtown and Universal and hit everything in between. You could go downtown, Little Tokyo, you know, Los Feliz,
yeah.
Hollywood, East Hollywood, Central Hollywood, and just hit shows all night or some restaurants and just see a lot without worrying about paying for parking or buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Yes.
So you could get a little buzz and walk, and you keep, you know, keep the blood flowing. And you're walking and
buzz walking.
Yeah, it's just awesome. It's just you could do so much in so little time, and it's always less stressful. So that's great. Yeah. Okay, so let's get back into this really quick. Okay, so Ruby, let's talk about your bass playing.
Okay.
Tell me, we had a conversation. A little after the first show we played together, I noticed you just seems like you come from a musical background. I said this, not just a bass player, but do you play any other instruments at all?
I try to play guitar a little bit. There was instruments in my house growing up, so I just, you know, kind of take on to it naturally.
Mm-hmm. When you're ready, kind of thing.
Yeah, I started like recording little things here or there, like seriously when I was about 20. Really is like trying to like lay down tracks for myself. It's still working on it here and there, you know, but time will come when I get to go more serious on that.
Do you have any bass playing influences?
Honestly, no. I love bass players, but it's not like there's one person that's gonna like be my idol.
Gene Simmons, Michael Anthony from Van Halen.
Nah. No.
I'm just throwing names out there to see if
I don't know. You know, people ask me that question too.
Percussions.
Like who's your favorite drummer?
Like, no one.
Like Hell Blaine, you know, Buddy Rich. I'm like,
nah.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I don't really know.
I don't know. It's just really organic
I think that's how it. I think that's how one identifies their creates an identity for their own music. Is maybe you appreciate certain musicians, but you don't just branch off of what they're doing. You're just doing your thing.
We're doing our thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think we love everybody and all styles of music, that there's no favorites. You know, we absorb it all. Like, I mean, between me and Ruby, like, we listen to so much different music. There's not
we're just
one.
Fans of music, periodly.
Right.
Know? We both grew up with a lot of music in our house.
Killer. What's as far as like playing in LA? Like, what other bands in LA do you guys fans of? Or like seeing? I mean, stuff that turns you on.
Oh man,
I'm really into bounce music right now. So I went
dance?
To see bounce.
Bounce.
So I saw Big Frida.
Ass bounce.
Is that what you call bounce music?
Yeah.
Big Frida.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen Big Frida. And I was like, oh, okay. It's like
it used
two
to
live
be
crew.
Like Miami Booty Bass.
Yeah,
used
Booty like, Bass, dude.
Booty Bass.
Music. Yeah, like Two Live Crew.
Yeah.
But you got to call it, it's a different time. You got to call it something different.
Luke Skywalker,
yeah,
right?
Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, it's been around for 20 plus
so
years.
So they call that bounce?
Yeah.
That's funny. I'm amazed by like how people are calling, you know, they call things the same thing, different things.
Yeah.
So you like bounce music?
Yeah, I like your record a lot.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's sweet.
It's casual.
It's casual.
Oh, that's sweet. I wasn't, you know, trying to open a door for that, but
no,
I listen
to it every day, people. I'm serious.
You listen to It's Casual every day?
I'll get ready for work. It's bumping in my room on my record player. My dad's probably like, what the hell is going on in there?
You know? I know, but you got to stop listening to bad music records, so you play Blast Cholas or Loyal really loud,
oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
That's awesome.
That's the best one.
That's awesome. So, okay, so we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to immerse ourselves in traditional Los Angeles Nista format and talk about the things in L.A. that Alfredo Ortiz can share with us from his experience from Gardena. And Silver Lake. And some Whittier, right? We're going to talk about some Whittier. And I'm going to tell all of you people how to get there on public transportation. Right?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, so we're going to hear some tunes, and we'll come back in a short while.
Peace.
Sweet.
We'll be right back. stereo blasting. Fools try to stare, but I roll right past them. Cruising down our cheese and down to the ocean. 70 degrees, light breeze, just coasting. South Bay grinding, Jimmy's in style and pit burger, Terry Plain, rodeo mixtape. Homies from the hood straight hitting us up. Ruthless ass Mexican will rough you up. Yo, jump on my Diamondback, bunny hop, endo. Stealing wood to build a ramp, got caught, hell no. Steve Cavallero and Tommy Guerrero, searching for the animal chimp in Frisco. Satisfaction unlimited. I begin to bang, not a gang, but a drum. Here I come, making noise for the whole damn neighborhood. Nobody complains, cause they know I'm up to all good. Punk rock, hip hop, R&B, smooth jazz, salsa, rock and roll, classical and old school. This is the life that I grew to love and hate. Giving thanks to family and friends that I appreciate.
Welcome back to Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, Eddie Solis.
Eddie!
Hey!
Eddie!
Stop. And you're listening to episode 12 with percussionist Fredo Ortiz.
Hi.
Joining me in the studio, episode 12, Los Angeles Nista. We spoke about Fredo's rich history in music, stemming from all sorts of great things like the Beastie Boys and, you know, Money Mark and his new group. He's fronting Bongaloids. I really like the fact that you're out there in the front, like such an established percussionist, and you're just in the front playing guitar and singing. It's just like, check this out. I just love that.
Yeah, it's because I'm normally in the back, you know, behind a wall of drums, and then all of a sudden I'm exposed, and not sitting down, standing up, you know, and all of a sudden I was like, I gotta really perform. Now I gotta actually, you know, be a guitar player and singer. Like, what the heck? Like, never really done that before.
Can't hide behind the drums.
Eyes, mijo. Stop staring at the floor.
And I think that's why, you know, when Ruby, you know, was like, I'll play bass. I was just like, yeah, I need some backup up here. Like, I need, you know, I don't want to be alone. You know, I need some support.
Can't be a one-man band forever. Like in, what is it, the Disney movie? Mary Poppins, he's like, he's trying to play all the instruments.
So Ruby's the reinforcement. I love
that. She's my backup.
That's great.
She hooks it up.
Now, before we get into the traditional Los Angeles Nisa format, let's plug the show again that you got coming up this weekend.
This Saturday, the 16th, is it? I put the flyer away.
Hold on one second.
It's called Best Bands of Los Angeles at the American Legion in historic Highland Park, Saturday, February 16th, 2013, at 8 p.m. The American Legion Hall is at 227 South Avenue 55 in Los Angeles, California, a.k.a. Highland Parque.
HLP.
And it's a $7 entry, 21 and over, full bar. And you'll get a free compilation CD of all the bands playing that night, except for Bongaloids, because Bongaloids will be presented in the next magazine that comes out and will actually be a part of the bill. We're kind of like the after party for the Bongaloids. Oh, okay. It's like the after party for this this whole show.
Okay, got it, got it. Okay, so you know what? We're going to talk about three cities tonight. One being Gardena, second Whittier, and three Silver Lake.
Yes, sir.
Now, Gardena is your hometown.
Gardena is hometown.
Okay. What places can you turn us on to that are there still from that have always been there since you were a kid? Food at any place.
Since I was a kid, and I used to go to Diana's Market, which was on the corner of 166th and Normandy.
Right.
I used to go buy cigarettes for my grandma. Uh-huh. She's like, I need a pack of more menthols. Go now. And I would go and I would go to the lady.
Go now. I love that.
Get a pack of more menthols. This is before, you know, they were carding people. You know, frajos, a pack of frajos.
I need some more frajos.
Long brown frajos, menthol even. I used to sneak a toke from my grandma, too. I'm like, I want to try it.
And she's like, just,
she's like, don't tell your father. Diana, so they also, besides cigarettes, they made the best menudo. So every Sunday morning, there was a line outside the door of people trying to, you know, holding their pots, getting menudo
like
in the
total
morning.
Total, like, traditional old school style. Yeah, bring your own pot.
Exactly.
Pay the bill and... Yeah. Fill it up.
And there was always this, I guess the, you know, there was a little girl on their, you know, the business sign. And that was Diana. It was little Diana. You know, I think she was even like, you know, like a queen for the city or something. Like, you know, okay.
Miss Gardena.
Miss Gardena,
yeah.
Exactly like that. You know, so that's been around. And catty corner to that, which I actually mentioned in my last song here, Sandburn, which was pretty much a story about me growing up in the South Bay.
Okay.
Is Pit Burger.
Ah.
And they have, I would say, the best chicken. I mean, the beef, chicken as well, but it was all about the beef teriyaki bowls.
Oh, wow.
You know, white rice. I mean, just, you know, just teriyaki. It's really simple, but I mean.
Man, super good.
Super good.
No.
I mean, and of course, you know, you always talk about skating. A lot of us were, there was a skate store called Sporting Ideas. In the area, and we'd all buy our boards. I think my first ollie on a Lance Mountain board. It was when they put all the graphite and the boards and all that stuff. You know,
right? Yeah, and, they called it bonite.
Bonite.
It's
exactly.
Like when your tail would chip, it looked like construction paper.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, "What the heck?" And so we'd skate to, and you know, we'd go and order food. We kind of used to be really bad and like. Pre-order a bunch of meals and go there, and there'd be like a row of bags waiting to get picked up, and we'd order our own food there, but then there's this like 10 bags of food waiting for pickup.
No one would claim it.
So it's just like, I'm pretty sure they all have to take it home and eat it.
Well, you know what? That's a pretty, like, you know, young skateboard thing to do. Like, yeah. You're looking, you know, you're stoked. You're looking how to, like, you know, express yourself. And it's just like, those are the days when, like, you do that kind of thing. You know, it's just like, you're on your board and everything's an adventure.
And party lines were the thing at that time.
You know what? You know what I'm looking for? Like, I remember, like, I was just talking about this to someone the other day. Like, in LA, we had party lines. I remember, like, you would call and you would just sit there, and then, like, everything was cool till the freaking cholos would get on and start threatening everybody.
Hey, what's up?
I'd be like, you know, and then, you know, then, like, me, I had a smart mouth. And I was like, you know, just lay into them. Just like, you know, I don't care, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And they're like, where are you? Come meet us right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but then, you know, what was cool, since we're talking about that, is remember that that gangster fanzine, Teen Angels?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I want to buy all of them. I think they stopped.
My dad has a few of them.
Yeah, I remember they used to sell them at tattoo shops. And it was like, you know, like there's punk rock fanzines. Mm-hmm. It was a gangster fanzine. Did you ever see one?
Was that a Cudahy, no?
I think so, but like people would like send in pictures from jail, or like they would throw parties on the front yard parties, and they'd be like throwing their gang signs, and they would like scan.
I love you, Letty.
It was like the Art LeBeau show in print. It was the print version of the Art LeBeau show, dedications and just like scanned Polaroids. Yeah. Like all low res, like so bad with like, and like people just like, you know, the penmanship, like the gangster running this, like all stoked on their set.
I kind of had a direct relationship to a lot of that culture. It was around, you know, my family and,
right.
you know, luckily, you know, music was what took me.
It saved you, right?
It saved me. You know, it's like, you know, I thank my parents, my mom and dad, for
that's
pushing
great.
The music thing on me, because I liked the glorification of it. I was like, oh, the writing's cool. It's artistic. I love the dress. You know, I'm wearing a Pendleton right now.
I know you are.
I'm not a cholo,
so,
but it's,
you know,
like,
for kids, you know, to go into that, but unless you have an
I got super excited because I've seen, like, you know, grunge flannels the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it. I got them. But it's just like, you know, it's just like, you know, walking to the Levi's store at Citadel, buy myself some long sleeve, like, flannels. But that's like a real Pendleton. It's, yeah, like, I got to make a trip to the surplus.
There's a Pendleton store in Lomita. And I don't really hang out down there, but it's off of PCH. And, you know, that's that whole South. But the only reason I know of it, because, you know, I lived in Gardena.
Right.
So it's like there's when I found out that, because I actually had my dad's old Pendletons. That's why I knew about Pendletons. And they, you know, they had moth holes and, you know, stuff like that. But once I figured out that the store was open, I went and, like, stocked up. And
that's cool. Know, that's
rather
really
expensive.
Cool. So as far as the Pitburger, now that's only in Gardena, right?
So that's only in Gardena, you know, and
that was like the local spot.
That was the local spot, and I think after a beef Terry rice, that's what you call. Mm-hmm. Make it a double Terry rice. We'd ride. We were also riding bikes. We were on GTs and Diamondbacks and all that. And lucky to have, you know, bicycles. We'd ride all the way down to Hermosa Beach, which is probably just like a 5 mile ride.
Right, right.
But we'd go to Hermosa, and Hermosa had this like little cul-de-sac, and all these skaters like Bill Danforth and all these would be like doing sessions there, and we just kind of just hang out at the beach. And so I kind of, growing up in Gardena, I had this, you know, a separate. Because, I mean, eventually we're going to get down to Whittier and Silver Lake.
Sure.
But it's just like, that was what I knew. And like I said, I was bused by my mom to school in Pico Rivera using somebody else's address because my mom was a teacher and, you know, she knew most of the teachers. So all of a sudden, like, I had, you know, the upbringing in Gardena, but then I went to school in Pico Rivera. And people in Pico Rivera were like, where do you live? I'm like, Gardena. They're like, where's that? Garden Grove? What?
Right.
They had no idea.
Because no one gets out of Pico Rivera.
Exactly.
So they can't comprehend where Gardena's at.
So I had these split cultures almost, you know. I had the skate world and surf world. And also, you know, Gardena's, you know, bordering Compton, Carson, Torrance.
The CPT.
You know, it's like my grandmother lived in Compton,
right.
You know, so I'd spend Thanksgiving and Christmas there, you know, and, you know, so hip hop was a big influence, you know, and Dr. Dre used to sell his mixtapes over at the Rhodium Swap Meet, you know, in Torrance, which was not too far from my house.
Right. And that was like what years?
So I was like mid 80s, you know, like 85,
yeah.
84, 85, 86, you know, I was starting, you know, my friends in the neighborhood. It was like my good friend Felix's brother who had all these records. And speaking of Two Life Crew, he brought a Two Life Crew to my house, album to my house one
right.
time. And I could not believe that was on a record.
Right, right, right.
I was like, where did you get this? This is, how did they sell, how did you get it? They can't sell this to you.
They can't sell this to little kids. Well, no, I mean, you know, going back and just touching about like people honing their craft and doing things organically. I'm just going to interject. This is off the subject, but the fact that the biggest producer in hip hop was actually slanging his mixtapes at the Rhodium. I mean, that goes back. You know, there's a lot of people that own a lot of technology, and that's fine. And they have a lot of recording equipment, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, if you don't have any chops and anything to say, it doesn't mean a thing how much equipment you have.
Right.
Now, the fact that, you know, a genre like rap music and hip hop has such a foundation built off, you know, non-musical instruments like turntables. I mean, you see, what people don't get is, you know, a DJ is not a guy with a laptop. A DJ is actually a guy with that could mix records live.
Yeah.
And do it all in a set.
He's
and then,
playing all his favorite songs.
Yeah, but he can mix them. He can mix live jams in a set and then do different sets and put them all on a mixtape and sell those. And then when you go see him do his thing live, that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, standing behind, you know, looking fresh behind a laptop.
Right.
You know, I just had to make my point.
No.
I just vented for a second.
I work at a music store and we have kids call in asking, how do I become a DJ? You know?
Are you serious?
Yeah. And they want to know, like,
how do I become a DJ?
How do I become a DJ?
You have a DJ starter kit?
Yeah. They're like, do you know Steve Aoki? He's like, no. It's like,
Really?
You know, kids, they don't understand at all. They don't see turntables anymore. They just see laptops, you know.
That's, I mean, hey, that's just the way it is.
They're concerned with making stickers for their laptop to be the new DJ, you know, put it on the outside.
Over the apples.
Yeah,
over the,
yeah.
Okay, enough of that.
DJ Applesauce.
That's a whole other episode.
Fiat.
I love your inside jokes. You know, I just want to hit the play button and just like start spinning stuff out as much as you guys go back and forth. So anyways, okay, so you went to school in Pico Rivera.
So I went to school in Pico Rivera from kindergarten all the way to what, middle school.
I got a Pico Rivera story for you.
Oh, shit.
It just happened yesterday, dude.
Ooh.
So I was visiting.
Was it at Gems, was it?
No. On Passons?
On Passons.
No.
Oh, I was best chili cheese fries, dude. Sorry.
I love their grilled cheese. Okay, so I was visiting my parents in Whittier, like the good son I am. Just kidding. Every weekend, that's a joke. So I was there, you know, Saturday and Sunday. And on the way back, I stopped off in Pico Rivera. I'm not going to say where, but I was in line. And there's a full on, you know, cholo about my age, 38. Son looked about 8 years old, third grade. He's behind me and he's having a conversation with him. And I like stop to pay attention. And then he's telling his son that he has to go get something from the car. So he's like, I want to go with you. He's like, you know, wait here, fool. Wait here, fool. He goes, Dad, I want to go with you. He's like, hey, fool, wait here. He's calling his kid fool. Hey, fool, wait here, fool. That was just yesterday. Wait here, fool.
That's
army training for the Pico Rivera streets. But seriously, I was like blown away. I was like,
you will address me as fool.
Like, this is a father talking to a son in line in Pico Rivera 24 hours ago. You know, he was telling him, hey, fool, wait here, fool. I'll be right back. When he walked out, I turned around. I go, this kid has to be in third grade, and he's calling him fool.
Right.
I go, all right, I get it. No one's breaking no cycle here.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I just thought I'd bring up my most recent Pico Rivera story.
Yeah, exactly. So Pico Rivera is still keeping it real.
Yeah, but I got to say, you know, I lived there for a while, and I used to live in, you know, one of the areas. I was
Barrios Tacos?
Right behind Tommy's on Durfee.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen and heard a lot. And there's a lot of unfortunate things that happen there. Yeah. And I don't want to dwell on them because I don't want to bring negativity into this positive, glowing studio where all this great work is being done.
Disco balls on.
Disco balls on, yeah. And I just think, you know, it's that's an interesting piece of geography, Pico Rivera.
Yeah.
I mean, going to school there, was it rough? I mean,
not at all. It was actually pretty calm, you know, and the school system that they had. I mean, I think that's the reason my mom sent me there is because she knew that all the teachers and knew that,
right,
you know, there wasn't going to be anything.
Was it private?
It wasn't private. It's public.
Gotcha.
And, I didn't go to private school till high school.
Okay.
Which messed me up forever.
That's true about the private school kids, huh? Like,
but you learn music.
Yeah. And the cool thing is I was in band for the whole time.
That's
I just looked forward to going to band practice every night.
You didn't go to raves? You didn't go to raves or ditching parties?
Yeah, I actually did. And I think by sophomore year, I think that was my first time.
Was there a party cruise? Sedano. Was there a party cruise?
Party cruise.
Throw parties and they put their name on the flyer?
What were some of the party cruise? Operation X. I remember Operation X.
But they were like gangs without the territory, right? It alternated to gangs.
I remember going to a ditching party in El Sereno, like somewhere by the McDonald's on Huntington.
Oh, yeah.
And you know,
it was gnarly, right?
And there was Jungle Juice and, you know, they're playing. And we all just kind of like stood against the wall. And then all of a sudden, like 10 cholos come in, all with guns, going, all right, everybody's got to go. Let's go. Let's go. And we're like, oh my God, get in the car. Quick, quick. We got to go back to school, dude. Take me back to school. Like,
Party Cruise was like, you know, in the early 90s, you know, all these areas, you know, like Gardena and Compton and, you know, parts of Whittier and Pico Rivera.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I mean, let's face it. I mean, in the 90s, it was pretty gang infested. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of tag banging. And it was, you know, you could have went that way or you could have went with music and skateboarding. And I can relate to you on that because that's the route I chose,
right,
was music and skateboarding. And that's obviously a positive pathway because you're learning self-expression, and you know, learning how to channel your aggression through creativity.
Yeah, and I you know, I wanted to be a part of all of that too because it was around me. I mean, I'm doodling now, and I.
You're doing block letters?
I did some like little block letters. Yeah. It's just like, it hasn't left me.
Yeah, what's rad about these guests today, folks, is that Ruby, the bassist to the left, you know, I'm like, I look to my left and she's doodling on a paper and she's writing like a full on LA sign, like the gangster.
Total there's LA three sign. Dots. There's like three a dots, sad yeah. tear. Yeah. There's Fredo mini face. 66 Blocka.
Blocka and everything.
Yeah. Studio
yeah.
thing.
And then Fredo's throwing the block letters while we're discussing all this. But, you know, this is funny. I mean, all that, I think it's just a sense of belonging. I mean, people who join gangs and, you know, yeah, you're born into it, but I think you could actually avoid it if you're mad enough to say, I don't want any part of this.
Yeah.
You know,
and
be the Lone Ranger, right. You know, and it's funny because when all that happened during high school, a lot of my friends did go that route and I was the only one skateboarding in front of my house, you know,
right.
And it was just a weird thing. And then there were still my friends from childhood. So I would go to their parties on weekends and see all hell break loose. So it was like, you know, but I knew like, you know, they're my friends and I'm being invited, but I knew when it was time to leave.
Yeah.
You know? And it was just so, it's so silly when you think about it. You know, but for party crews, the most amazing party crew name I've ever heard was these chicks from my high school. It was called the Ho Patrol.
There's
some hoes.
Yeah, I mean, who does this with their spare time? It's like, I pick up an acoustic guitar, make coffee, and try to write songs, and, you know, people are putting flyers out with, like, you know, Ho Patrol on
it. So those were the 90s? I guess there was...
Okay, so...
Because, like, late 80s, remember the Cha-Cha, like, Cha-Cha Aquanet party cruise to, like, Champagne Gents and, like...
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's all those.
Like Lisa, Cold Jam.
All that stuff.
Dude, you know what's badass is that.
Debbie Deb.
Yeah, I saw this movie called End of Watch. Did you guys see that? It's like the new colors.
No.
And it's so good. I even bought it on DVD. I was like, I have to see this. And it's like LA. It's like colors. Like the same kind of story. But it's LA now. And it's relevant. But when they show the backyard gangster party, it's like. It's like Lisa, Cold Jam B-sides.
Oh,
it's like, that's bad. Like
that's the normal. That's the normal, like, you know, going to Easter at my aunt's house or something.
Yeah, like old school Power 106 cha-cha music.
Totally.
But like if you're like, you know, hear that in someone's backyard.
It's official.
Like, it's like, dude, shit's going to go down tonight. Oh, yeah. Not oldies or rap. Like if you hear that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ladies and
girls
gentlemen,
are taking their shoes off.
The party has just begun.
That's so bad. No. Okay, so when you were thrown into the whole world of Whittier, what were some of your places you like to go to, you know, eat or skate spots or places to play with your band?
Is it Lascaris? Is that over there?
Oh, the Italian place.
The Italian place. Went there many a times.
They deliver.
Well, you see... My experience in Whittier was mainly from Gardena to my friend's house on Friends and straight to his basement.
Mm.
And
music.
And to just jam all night and write and do everything. And then I would go with him to whatever spots, you know, and of course we'd just be on Greenleaf or, you know, just like, I think we play a lot of shows at Ambrose and
the Pizza Place. Yeah,
Pizza Place
next to Lavelle's. The Lavelle's.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and then to Los Sanchez and then back.
Los Sanchez on Whittier.
On Whittier, yeah.
And Comstock, yep.
And
that place is the bomb.
Yeah,
still.
And so and then they just, you know, I through that circle of friends, you know, I still am friends with a lot of people from that area, but that. I just found myself in Whittier all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents had friends there too, and be like, "Oh, this is where I was going. This is the city I was going to when I was younger." You know, didn't know it. You know, you're just in a car driving, and it's like, "No, now I'm here." So that's kind of my relation to Whittier. You know, I was just, you know, going to my friend's house.
Right. You know, it's cool for people who want to immerse themselves in Whittier. It's there's one bus. That will take you all the way down Whittier Boulevard.
Oh,
and you
nice.
Can just get on and off it. It's like, it's the Montebello bus line.
Yeah.
The line 10. You know about the line 10?
Well, because you could see the Montebello and you're like in Whittier. And
yeah.
It's like,
well, this is a Montebello, so that's definitely a bus line.
Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So what's cool about it is like, you know, see, like you don't have a car or you don't want to use it. you could get on the Montebello Line 10, and it takes you from Whitwood, and it goes all the way down Whittier Boulevard through Uptown. And you could do your thing in Uptown for the day. Movie, Rocky Cola Cafe, yeah. Buy some records at LaBelle's.
Norms.
Norms, the bigger, better breakfast.
Monkeys to Go was over. Yeah,
Monkeys to Go, right? And all these, you know, there's a skate shop called Legends.
Yeah.
And you go to all these places. Now Phoenix 5-4 is a new venue.
Right. Ice cream shop.
Yeah. Well, the 10 runs, you know, like every 20 minutes. So, I mean, you could do your thing and then get on the 10 and keep going west. And that'll take you back down Whittier Boulevard through Montebello.
Wow.
And to the Gold Line in East LA by ELAC, and you get on the Gold Line and go to Union Station and come out to LA. So you could use that as a tool. It's like a $3 day pass on Montebello.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's really ways to, you know, experience what Whittier has to offer. So, you know, I mean, and very, very cheaply and without using your own car.
And see, I'm used to just having a car. I remember when it was called the RTD, you know, I was like, but I've always driven everywhere. So
RTD's old school.
Dude.
I love it.
And you know, so, but, and to listen to you say this, I was like, damn, yeah, that's right. Like, you can just get on the bus.
It can be done.
Go to Whittier, yeah. Hang out.
Well, yeah. So you,
go to Wiener Schnitzel.
Wiener Schnitzel right there on Norwalk and Painter. Yeah. No, Norwalk and Whittier. Right?
Is it right there?
Norwalk
Boulevard and Whittier. No, Beverly.
So Painter.
Beverly.
Painter. There's one on Painter.
The one on Painter.
There's one on Painter in Whittier. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite, Ruby? Which one?
Oh, I don't know.
You don't care?
But I used to dance. My mom used to pimp us out. I don't know how to say it, but like my mom was a total like dance mom. So she would have us dance in front of that ice cream shop on Greenleaf.
She
would talk to like the business owners and be like, oh, my children dance, you know. And she'll try to scam something out of it, yeah. You know, anything, scoop of ice cream, whatever.
What kind of dance were you doing?
Folklorico, and we'd change in the parking lot in the van.
So you could dance dresses? That, the folklorico style.
Yeah, I grew up doing all that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, my mom would just, like, find places for us to dance, and hopefully, like, we wouldn't get kicked out because we don't have permits. We're just, like, gypsies and show up.
Well, that's what you call DIY, right? You just make it happen. So you currently reside, Fredo, in Silver Lake.
So I'm in Silver Lake. I moved to Silver Lake probably, what, like 11 years ago? 10 years ago? Hold on, 12 years ago, maybe? I moved in to my wife's place in Silver Lake.
That's great.
And, I mean, before I knew Silver Lake as a place to go play gigs.
Sure.
You know, you always heard about the, you know, the hip hop Silver Lake, but it, you know, that didn't affect me. You know, it was just another city to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't know what it was like till I was living there, and it put me right smack in the middle of LA and close to work, you know,
because industry.
Yeah. Cause I would have to prepare my hour of travel from Gardena to Hollywood, you know, pack my drums, make sure I left with enough time to get to load in or with a sound check,
sure,
or whatever, you know. But, and now it's just like, you know, like, oh, the gig's at 3:00, I'll leave at 2:30, you know. Or whatever, you know.
So it's always very extra special to me when we talk about a certain part of Los Angeles County. We focus on the geography, and Silver Lake is one of them. And we actually are able to have a independent business owner to represent that actual area.
Yeah.
So, Fredo, since you're very close to her, I'm going to let you introduce her.
This is my wife, Aileen Kiernan.
Yay! Hello.
How are you, Aileen?
Fabulous.
Thank you for joining us. And you own Earth Yoga.
Yes. Well, my partner and I, yes.
Right. Now tell us about this.
Well, it's a wonderful little yoga studio right in the heart of Silver Lake.
I've seen it. It's right across from Epitaph Records.
It is. Yeah. It is, indeed. And hopefully, we've been petitioning for a crosswalk there so that you can cross the street, go to Epitaph, go to yoga.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been in business?
Been there a bit over 6 years.
Okay.
So, And we're in our seventh year, I guess. Yeah. So.
Very nice. I think it's a great location and looks great from the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's even better from the inside.
Cool. So are you guys open 7 days a week?
7 days a week. Yeah. And classes going on throughout the day. We have great teachers, you know, for all levels.
Okay.
Mostly for beginners, you know.
Really?
A lot of our clients, I should say, our students come and you can stick with the basics level and still get a really good workout. So it's not like you have to be a pretzel or come to learn to be folding yourself like a pretzel.
It's, right.
You know, we're really, you know, laid back. We're a very laid back studio. Just come and, you know, hopefully one day I'll get Fredo in there.
Nice.
My God, I'm just afraid to bend and lay that bellow out, you know, and clear the room. Be like, whoa, what is that?
So as far as the studio goes, you're saying there's a class there for all different levels.
Yes. Yes.
And how many different teachers do you have on the roster?
You know, around 15 or so teachers. So it varies each day. The levels and the teachers, you know, just have to check the schedule.
Do you teach yourself?
I don't. My business partner does.
Okay.
Her name's Gabe. She's amazing. And I'm more like the business half.
The admin.
Yes, the admin.
QuickBooks.
Yes, all that stuff.
I can relate. I do it.
Yeah. It's gotta be done.
Yeah, it's good. So do you yourself participate in yoga? Do you do it a lot?
I do. I probably do it more often, but I do. I've been doing yoga actually probably since I was like 13 or 14.
Wow.
On and off.
Very cool.
You know, on my own and then through school. I did some in college and just always been into physical activity.
Very nice. Yeah, as you know, LA's a big place, and when you get into the cities, you know, downtown, Angelino Heights, Echo Park, Silver Lake, Los Feliz, Hollywood, West Hollywood, that's where people really post up to make something happen.
Yeah.
That's where the entertainment industry is, you know, music, movies, television, radio, etc. And your yoga studio, Earth, mm-hmm. which is spelled URTH.
Yes,
right. Yeah.
Correct.
It's right in the heart of Silver Lake.
Yep.
So it just seems like, you know, there would be a lot of competition, you know, for business, but it seems like you guys do pretty well because of the location. I'm sure you got good quality teachers.
Yep.
My question to you is, you know, for everyone who's listening, what sets your studio aside and makes it its own compared to the others?
Well, and there are a lot of others, especially in Silver Lake. I can name a few off the top of my head, but for us, we really try to keep it, like I said, really low-key and accessible to everyone. You know, there's a lot of variety of people that live in Silver Lake. And not only live there, but people that are transient, you know, that come to L.A. just for a show or for, you know, a project, and then they're out. So we really try to make it just as accessible to as many different people as possible. And that means, you know, there's no frills. It's not about, you know, looking your best, like... No.
Yeah, some places it's kind of like, you know, like, you know, I've never gone, but it just seems like getting into that world of yoga studios, it's kind of like signing up for a gym now. You know, people are there to show off.
Right, right.
And it just seems like, yeah, so it's a very non-confrontational place.
Yeah, we're not like that. We're, you know, like I said, there's so many different people in the area. It's like we want it to be, a lot of people can look at yoga and think like, oh, it's some weird cult and I don't know what that's about and I don't want to be a part of that. And really it's not. It's a really good exercise for your mind and for your body. And so we try to just have it be really, really low key. And our other thing is that we're very environmentally conscious. Like everything we use in our, from, you know, the paint on our walls to what we clean our floors with to, you know, what we wash our towels with. It's all, we try to use all natural, you know, where we can organic, fair trade, you know, all that kind of good stuff so that, you know, the lack of chemicals creates to the healthier environment.
And right.
So
have you seen from your perspective as a yoga studio owner, have you seen a spike in yoga enthusiasts?
Well, I guess from my perspective, yes. But from what I've heard, there's always been the scene, but it changes, you know, it navigates from different styles from time to time. Or, I mean, I guess like anyone does, they'll get really into one thing, one exercise. Like, I don't know, the latest one is like CrossFit or something. You know, they get into that and then they move on. But it's, I mean, we've been steadily growing over the past
That's great.
Years. And, you know, a lot of regulars, just, you know, once they kind of dive in, they get a sense of what it's about. And they sign up. And it's not like we have like a membership. I'll walk in. You could come to a class anytime you want.
Oh, okay. So it's not like you're binded to a contract.
No, no, you know, not at all.
It's very loose.
It's very loose. And, you know, for those that are, you know, have budgetary restraints. We have, you know, a $5 yoga hour, so you can just pop in, $5, get your yoga on, and, you know, hopefully feel better after.
That's a great deal. I mean, it's a great location. I mean, it looks beautiful from the outside, you know.
Yeah.
I'll get in there one day. One of these days. Make sure I don't eat burritos.
I can see that. We have
you know?
A gentle class.
Gentle.
It's called a gentle class?
It's called gentle, yeah.
Is that entry level? Or that, not really?
You know, really it's focused on those that maybe are recovering from injuries or have special needs or, you know, or whatnot. Or just really want to take it slow, very down to the basics, basic poses and things like that. Because even a basics class for us, it's going to be a good workout. You know, you're going to get your heart rate up. You're going to break a sweat. You know, but that's what it's about.
Right. You sign up to do that, you know, to progress.
Yeah. And again, you know, most people aren't there to become the most flexible or become some superstar in the yoga world or whatnot. But that are just there to get a good workout, you know, have a good time and a good environment, you know, with really down-to-earth people. And that's kind of the community we want to create.
Very nice. And are there any websites you can let us know about?
There is. We have a website, earthyoga.com. That's URTHYOGA.
And Facebook, Twitter, anything else?
We're on Facebook. I think it's Facebook/EarthYogaLA.
Cool.
We have a Twitter. I don't think we tweet too much, but, you know.
Right. Also, you know what's cool is you guys, like I said, are in the heart of Silver Lake. So if you're coming from downtown, you could take the number 2. Like, for instance, if Fredo and I wanted to, like, get a bunch of people from Whittier and Pico Rivera, we could say, okay, we're going to Earth Yoga. Here's how you do it on public transportation. Like, if we were going from, like, leaving from Pico Rivera in front of Tommy's, we would take the line 10, right, all the way down Whittier to Atlantic and Beverly. Get on the Gold Line, and we would take the Gold Line to Union Station. And we would get from Union Station, we would get the Red Line up to Pershing Square. See, people get intimidated by all these changes, but it's so fast.
Yeah.
And we would come to the surface street and take the number 2 right in front of the door of Earth Yoga. Or if you're coming like anywhere else from Central Hollywood or Los Feliz or, you know, Hollywood and Highland, you just jump on the number 2 because the number 2 is like the artery, the bloodline of LA because it goes from UCLA to downtown.
Wow.
So from UCLA, you can go to Earth Yoga.
It's true.
And, you know, Martin Wong is a UCLA alumnus. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, he could really make it work. So we're going to put all this information in the podcast and really spell it out for people to get them there and put your links up there. And that does it for episode 12.
Good. Awesome.
And, you know, I guess that's a wrap. Next week, legendary rock photographer Ed Culver, who did the Black Flag Damage cover.
Nice.
Some Chili Peppers. And I want to thank Fredo Ortiz.
Thank you.
Ruby, thank Bongaloids.
Up.
Fredo's wife,
thank
Aileen.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Our in-house photographer, Adam L. Murray. Soundboard operator, Nicholas Chacon.
All right.
We'll see you next week with Ed Culver. Then on the 25th, we got James Rhoda in here, the producer for the new Dave Grohl movie, Sound City.
Oh, nice. Oh.
Yeah, so we're just going to keep, you know, moving forward. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Good night.